Thursday, May 21st, 2024. It's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm Marco Galbraith, your host, Active Listening with T4 Tactics. And I'm going to briefly tell you about what we do at T4 Tactics. Then I'm going to get into some misconceptions of active shooter response training. So basically, we do firearm locally here in Lynchburg, Virginia. I do firearm safety training. I don't sell guns or ammo. The classes are geared at creating safe, legal, reasonable and responsible gun owners. Virginia says, I got to talk about this. NRA, USCCA, which I'm certified to teach in, says, you got to talk about this. I go well above that because it's that important. The class is geared to keep people safe, legal, and out of trouble and free of injury and free from injuring others. Then active shooter response training. Again, travel the country doing all these classes. So far this year, it's March, and I've gone to 9 different states, and we've trained right at 6,500 people. What I like about it is if those 6,500 people go back and tell one person, and then they tell one person what they've learned, that's a lot of people trained. We can reduce injuries and save lives through awareness, prevention, proper training, and, of course, mitigation. So when I come out to do active shooter training, I'm going to look at your facility. We're going to create it as a hard target without it looking like a prison. We want the bad guy that could be possibly planning a violent attack on your location to look at that and say, nah, they got this. That shows me that they have security involved. They've thought about it. Not a good place to hit. But we don't want it looking like a prison. So we also want the building to work for us and not against us in the horrible event that we were to have the unthinkable occur. Then I'm going to come in and do staff training. It's right at probably 2 hours and 40 minutes. I say 3 hours because I like to have an extra 20 minutes at the end to pass our microphone around the room. And we do a town hall where we discuss any issues that we think are potential hazards for that workplace. I don't come in and do tier training like a lot of people do. I believe that we should come in and address everything completely and fully and aggressively the first time and get it done right. I also don't do, when I talk about all my training, I don't do anything online or virtual. Of course, there's copyright and proprietary information. I don't get my information from anything electronic. I don't get it from watching a documentary or reading a book. I've traveled to 16 different locations of the most horrible attacks that you've all heard about, and I've interviewed 97 people so far. I'll either respond immediately after the event or I'll let the dust settle. But what I do is go out and get primary source information straight from the people that were involved in that attack, whether it's victims, witnesses, survivors, law enforcement. But that's the information I give in my presentations because I firmly believe we need to learn from what successes and failures that prior location experienced. That's the way we learn. I'm not a fan of run, hide, fight. I don't teach that. I teach it on a different platform. So that's why I don't do virtual training. Another reason why is when I speak to the group, I tell the audience that I'm speaking not to them as a group, but each and every individual person. I'm watching faces as I'm speaking. I've got about 29 years as a college professor, adjunct professor, during and after my law enforcement career. So I can read the room. I'm familiar with the classroom, how people learn, how they get stumped up. So I want that connection. I want people to come up to me on the break because they're afraid to ask it in front of anybody else. But I want that handshake and I want that conversation. I want to meet people before and after. I want to make that connection. You know as well as I do, if you've taken an online virtual class, I can tell you right now, most of the online classes that I've taken in my career, whether it's career development or going after an additional schooling that I want, I'm multitasking. While the person is online talking, I'm sending emails or I'm doing this or doing that. I don't want that. This, for me, that topic is too important to do that. I want eye-to-eye contact. We're talking about reducing injuries and saving lives here. There are people that will do it online, but that's not me. I'm not an online instructor. I do it in person. Unfortunately, I've had to turn down some business because I won't do it virtual. And I'll stick to that because I think there's a certain quality that we have to have in that. So we'll also do what I call hostage negotiation 101 classes. We do de-escalation. De-escalation is very important. De-escalation is customer service 101. What we want to do is we want to de-escalate an angry customer or an angry employee or a vendor, somebody that may come into our hospital, school, our business, our convenience store, our grocery store, whatever location may be, we don't want them to leave angry, go out in the car and get a weapon and come back in and do something stupid. We don't want them to leave angry, go home and sit around and fuel on that they think they were done wrong by that business. And now you start getting into that active shooter stage, that predatory violence where they start planning an attack. So it's de-escalation techniques. It's hostage negotiation 101. It's how to get into somebody's head that's really angry and turn them around to be on your side before they even do it. There's a lot of techniques. It's easily done. It's verbal judo is what a lot of people call it. I think it's one step above that, but it's body language. It's what we do and how we present ourselves, our tone of voice. It's not what we say, it's how we say it. So you can say the same, you could say a different word, but it's the tone. So we can de-escalate somebody. You're not going to de-escalate an active shooter. We put distance between ourselves and the active shooter. And then we're going to do business reunification as another service that we offer. If there, heaven forbid, if there is a horrible attack, I'll respond. I can usually get out there within 48 hours. And what we're going to do is I'm going to sit down with all the employees that were involved in that in one session. And we're just going to talk about it. And if they say, I saw the guy coming in and I shouldn't have buzzed him in the door. He just didn't look right, but I buzzed him in anyway. We're going to tell that person that's okay because they've never been in anything like that before. So we're going to set the employees at ease. We're going to talk about what went right, what went wrong. The reason I do this is what happens during the Super Bowl at halftime. The coach goes in and does a very, very strong command presence debriefing to the team. What have we been doing wrong on the first half of this game? What did we do right in the first half of this game? Let's fix it so we change the game around. If we're losing, we got to fix it. When there's a major event, police and fire always do a debriefing. Why don't businesses do a debriefing when something horrible happens? So we're going to come out and do that. Then I'm going to meet with all the employees. So I'm going to meet privately with the employees that were there during that horrible incident. We're going to get them more comfortable. We've got ways to do it, a lot of folders and subfolders. Then we're going to meet with the rest of the employees if they want to, and we're going to kind of bring them in. After that, I'm going to meet with employees one-on-one, and I tell management, I tell CEO, I tell HR, I will meet with these people one-on-one. I want to find out what we could have done to prevent this attack. What do you feel lacks in security up here? And then I'm going to bring that back to management, but I give my word to the person that tells me that, and I give my word to management. Don't ask me who said it. It's a general session. Because if somebody knows, I'm going to go back and say, yeah, John Doe said this. Well, you know what? They may not say it, but if they know they're speaking freely, the whole reason why we want to get this out in the open is because we had a horrible event, usually where somebody was seriously injured or killed. We want to address that so it doesn't happen again. This is where we're reducing insurance payout costs. This is where we're reducing civil liability, criminal liability. We're addressing and fixing the problem. We do this very delicately, very diplomatically, and very professionally. And then you know what we're going to do after that? I'm taking them all out for pizza. We're going to get in our street clothes, and we're going to go out for pizza, and we're going to go back into society and relax, and we're just going to laugh. Pizza, wings, whatever they want to have. We're just going to relax, but we're going to realize that, you know what, we're back into society. We're going to ease ourselves back in. I'll also meet with management and talk about what we need to do to start the reunification of this business. What do we have to do to get back up and running so we are accommodating the customers and the employees and families? There's a lot to do to that. It's not rocket science, but the reunification of employees is very important. When we don't let them come back to work right away, that's where we start having employees that just witnessed the unthinkable. That's when they're sitting at home and we've got the possibility of substance abuse. We've got the possibility of depression. We've got the possibility of suicide. There's a lot of people that need to jump right back into work. They need structure. So let's make that a possibility. So now let's get to the meat and potatoes of this podcast, Misconceptions of Active Shooter Response Training. These are 10 that I hear all the time when I talk to businesses about active shooter response training. So I've written them down. We're going to go over them. Now, my response to these is geared towards how I teach it, not other people teach it. There are businesses that are doing a great job doing this. There are people that have had amazing careers in law enforcement. However, it had nothing to do with active shooter training. It had nothing to do with street police work, which I feel is where you're going to learn a lot about how to deal with people, human violence. So these answers are geared upon how I deliver the product. So the first misconception is it's only for large organizations or public spaces. That's a misconception. Sutherland Springs Baptist Church, very small congregation, 26 shot and killed on that church service. We've got other very, very small locations that have been attacked. One of the misconceptions I hear all the time is we've got a very small organization and it won't happen from within. Well, I've heard where people have said that and it has happened. Or I've gone out to interview these people and they said, we never thought it would happen here because we're such a tight, close-knit community, or we're such a close, tight-knit business, or nobody can get in and there's only 12 of us in here and nobody can get in. Well, surprise, surprise, one of the 12 came in and killed seven people on one of these incidents I'm talking about. So we do training for, I've done auto manufacturers, I've done an organization that just had a major event. They're the largest, I've just finished a two-year contract with them. They're the largest spectator sport in North America. And we just did them. So food manufacturers, pharmaceutical companies, mom-and-pop restaurants, mom-and-pop convenience stores. There's not a size that, well, we're too small, or we're too big. Get it done. Second misconception is it creates unnecessary fear or panic. If I go in there and do a presentation, I can create fear and panic, but that's not what this is about. I go in and we make it very relaxing. When I open up, I say some things that are going to completely relax people. That's what I want. I'm not in it for shock value. I'm not in it to tell people, for me to say something and watch their face. Wow, that's not what I enjoy. This topic is scary enough. I don't need to embellish it and make it worse than it is. So we don't need to create that. What I'm doing on my presentations is I'm going to give them the skill, education, confidence to, first of all, what we want is to recognize an attack, and then what we want to do is shut it down before it occurs. If it does occur, then before it occurs, and then if it does occur, what we want to do is mitigate it properly. So it's not fear or paranoia. We're not fear-mongering. It's given people confidence, and it's given people the knowledge to understand, wow, I didn't know that this happened at Columbine. I didn't know this happened at Vegas. I didn't know this happened at Fifth Third Bank. I never knew that this happened at Superfoods, or at this school or at this church. So that's what we talk about. But it's going to give. We're empowering people is what we're doing. The third misconception is it's one size fits all. This is what grinds my gears, folks, is that people have active shooter presentations. It's the same presentation all the time. The reason I do a facility review is I'm coming out to look at your facility. When I'm doing this, my presentation, I want to be able to say, you know how when you walk down the hallway and there's two bathroom doors and then down the further the hallway, there's a break room. And if you go down and turn right, it's the HR office. What we want to do is I want them to know that this presentation is about them. It's about their building. It's the type of customers they have, the type of employees they have. It's the type of area that they do business in, if whether it's on-site or off-site. So it's never a one-size-fits-all. I don't come in and do run, hide, fight. I talk about that it's I can't come in and say, if this happens, do this. We're going to talk about the best practices and what has worked and what has not worked in prior cases. So never, ever, ever is it the same presentation. It is specifically geared for what you do. Fourth misconception is it encourages vigilantes, and it doesn't. We teach, the reason I don't like run, hide, fight is it doesn't address a lot of human responses. It doesn't address a lot of human behavior. We're going to teach people to put distance between themselves and the shooter. We're going to teach people, first of all, follow the policy of the business that you're employed by. That's what we want. I'm going to help you write a policy. Follow the policy. What does the policy say? We're going to follow that policy. We always have to be able to think outside the box in case that fails. We got to have an alternative route or an alternative escape plan, or what are we going to do? But we're not going to encourage people to go after the active shooter. We want them to put distance between the active shooter. If you're backed in a corner and you have to fight, that's what you're going to do. But we're not trying to encourage vigilantes. The reason why is there are a ton of people, and I can say this because I've been teaching this for 12 years, firearm safety classes and active shooter response training. There's a lot of people out there, a lot of people out there, that are carrying a firearm, and they think they're going to go up against that active shooter. Now, they haven't trained enough, and they're not going to meet their expectations of what they think they can do. It's where fantasy crashes into reality. So we're not going to teach people to be vigilantes or to take the law into their own hands. You got to be very careful with that, and we go into that during our training. Misconception number five, it focuses solely on law enforcement response. If you look at Uvalde, if you look at Joel Osteen's church in Texas, police stood down, unfortunately. I've got video of that latest church attack from a month ago, where two female police officers cowered down and hid in a stairway corridor, while shots were being fired. And they did not go do what they were supposed to do. So, yes, it does. Yes, we hope law enforcement's going to respond, but there are situations where law enforcement can't respond. What if the roads are icy and they can't get to you in a hurry? What if they get there and they don't want to come in? What if they get there and they're commanded not to go in? What if there's a major incident happening on the other side of the city, town, state, county, wherever you're at, and it's going to take a while for the officers to get here? I'm in Bedford County, Virginia, and it's a 500 square mile county, and there's a lot of times where there's two deputies working per shift at night. They're not going to get there quick, especially if they're on a domestic call backing up each other on the other side of the county. There will be multiple agencies responding to an active shooter attack, but we're going to talk about pros and cons of a law enforcement response. Sixth misconception is it assumes a specific role for active shooters. Now, we know that there could be one active shooter. They could have secondary firearms. They could have explosive devices set up in the parking lot. There can be secondary shooters. They've blocked exits before. They've used smoke grenades. They've used normalcy bias to get people to where they're feeling comfortable about nothing's going to happen here. So we have to think outside the box. That's, again, why we go back to number three, where it's one size fits all. We can't do one size fits all, but it's not a specific role. The active shooters don't have a specific role. These active shooters, through interviews by law enforcement, have admitted and have proven through manifestos, videos, documents that they've produced, that they have extensively studied active shooters, prior active shooters, and they're going to be the bigger and the better one. And that's statistics that's under the predatory violence, the developmental stage of an active shooter that we talk about in our training. And that's what they're going after, is I want to be bigger and better. The seventh misconception is it's a one and done training. It shouldn't be a one and done training. I usually recommend that if you have a lot of turnover at a business, then we do this once every 18 months. If you don't have turnover, then we can do it once every two and a half years. But you have to think about the training. Now, when we come in and do the training, I'm going to set you up with a lot of homework assignments that you need to continue to do to keep that property safe. Risk management, threat assessment teams, roundtable discussions. So when I come into the training on my last day there, we're going to set you up, and when I leave, you're going to have some assignments that you're going to keep doing to keep that property safe. So it's not one and done training. You don't have to keep doing it and keep doing it. Like I said, unless you have a lot of turnover, then I would maybe suggest looking at that. The eighth misconception is it creates a culture of fear. Going back to fear mongering, it's not. The training can create a culture of fear if it's delivered that I'm going to come in there and teach with a baseball cap on and a golf shirt and my BDUs and my military combat boots, and I'm going to come up there and talk about what a badass I am. That's not the way to do it. You'll scare people doing that. You have to show them the respect. You have to be humble, in my opinion. I'm very humble when I teach it. And I have some other guys and girls that teach us as well. They're very humble. You can't go in and if I wanted to go in and scare people, I can do that. But that's not what it's about. I'm not doing anybody any good if I go in there and fearmonger or if I get them all riled up. That's not doing good. We have to think about how humans learn and how they respond and what they respond to. And we have to deliver it in a way to where they're getting it, but they're not going to be scared to come to work the next day. They're not going to be scared to go to the grocery store. They're not going to be scared to go to church. They're not going to be scared to go out to eat or go to a concert. You have to continue to live your life, but you just need the education, skill, confidence to recognize something's not going right, pre-attack indicator, and handle it. Remove yourself from it. Ninth misconception is it only involves evacuation. So it doesn't. Unfortunately, there are some cases where you're going to have to go hand to hand or fight or attack the active shooter. So it's not just about evacuation. That's the best thing we want to do. Even if you're a concealed carry holder and you're not tactically trained, you don't have the proper training, you have to recognize that. If you don't have the proper training, then you need to lock down. That's why we do the facility review. Let's create areas of refuge. You need to lock down or you need to evacuate and get as far away from that building. Don't just evacuate and go out in the parking lot. Run. If I'm in a school and it's in a neighborhood, I'm going to run 7 houses down and go behind that house. And then I'm going to come out when I know everything's clear for reunification. I'm going to identify myself to the police or the officials for reunification. But a lot of people have been tagged in the parking lot by a secondary shooter or an explosive device because they ran out in the parking lot. Whew, okay, good. I'm out of the building. I'm safe now. So when we go over that, the 10th final misconception is it guarantees absolute safety. It does not. In the beginning of my presentation, I talk about a time continuum and how fast an active shooter moves and statistics of how many minutes, how many casualties, how many people were shot. It's a math formula, and we're going to talk about that. More than likely, you will have fatalities. Let's take a grocery store, for instance. We can have that entire grocery store trained. If we have an active shooter come in, there's a good possibility that the cashiers, the people that are bagging groceries, and maybe management up front are probably going to get injured. But through proper training and awareness, we can stop it right there. Now, here's a good story. I have a friend. She used to work at a local grocery store, and she was always, always watching people come through the door. So it's your people that are gathering carts in the parking lot, and it's your front-end staff that are going to notice that person when they first pull up or when they first get out of the car with that weapon or when they first walk in. So this girl, we had a game. Whenever I'd walk in, we have a game to see who could see the other person first. I'm going to tell you, every time I came to the door, she's already got eye contact on me. That is situational awareness, and that's what we talk about. She's not paranoid. She's not sitting there paranoid, but she's not playing on her phone. She's still doing her work, but every now and then she'll take a glance at the door. She'll take a glance at the general area in the front. That's situational awareness. Let me tell you something. She doesn't work there anymore, but if she did, she would be the very first one to see something that's not right. She would see that anomaly coming through that door, and she would be the one to reduce injuries and save lives. So those are some misconceptions that I always get asked about. I hope they helped you out. If I can help you out with anything, if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't had active shooter training, regardless of what your facility does, regardless of what your position is in your company, if you email me, info@t4tactics.com, give me your address, your name, address of the building, I'll send you a proposal. I'm not in this business to get rich. I believe I've been given information and a talent to do this. I've been blessed by this. The good Lord gave me the ability to do this. So this isn't a get-rich scheme by me. If it was a get-rich scheme, I would be doing online training every single day from the comfort of my home. I don't do that. I take the time to travel out and connect with people. I have a lot of businesses that will call me after I do the training and say, hey, you know, the HR director, hey, we got this going on. What do we do? And I'll guide them through it. Do I charge them for it? No. If it's something I can answer quickly, rather quickly in an email, if we can do a 15 to 20 minute call to guide them, then that's what we're going to do. So I'm in it to reduce injuries and save lives. I could be very rich doing this, but I choose not to. So with that being said, if I can help you out, I'm very willing to help you out. I'll work with you in any way I can. But over the years, yes, we've seen active shooter attacks go up. They've been more coordinated. They've been more dialed in. We see the attacks going up. But here's the good news. We're seeing injuries and deaths go down. Why? Because we're starting to really roll out this training. Businesses, churches, schools, universities, hospitals, all kinds of businesses are starting to buy into this training, and we're getting people trained where they prevent it through threat assessment teams, or they're able to mitigate it when it happens. So my website's T4 Tactics. It's the letter T, the number 4tactics.com. You can look and see what my local schedule is. I never talk about my clients. I've got a ton of really cool businesses that you've probably enjoyed their products. It's what time is it? 3:49 in the afternoon. I would imagine most of you that are listening to this have already enjoyed several of the products of the places where I've done training. But I don't talk about that. Just like when HR calls me and tells me a problem, that stays between me and them. I learned one thing in the Special Investigations Unit when I was a supervisor, and in police work, you got to keep your mouth shut. You can't repeat things. So any communication at all that we talk about, between it stays between T4 Tactics and your business. I would love to put on my website some of the business logos that I've trained. Wow, very impressive, but I don't do it. References are available upon request, but I personally feel that if I put the businesses out there that I've trained, I could be putting a target on their back. So I just don't do it. I think it needs to be confidential between me and the business, and that it stays right there. So thank you for listening. That's 26 minutes of good information. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you can use it. If I can help anybody out, let me know. Active listening with T4 Tactics. Please share this with your friends. I appreciate it. Got to get people trained.